Thank you to Rabbi Danziger. Rabbi Danziger and I do go back for many, many years. The entire Danziger family and his brothers and Mr. Danziger, Rabbi Danziger Sr. as well. And it's a pleasure to be here. You are all very, very blessed to have such a chashuv Rabbi and Rebbeson with beautiful midos and sets a beautiful example for how to conduct their lives personally and in a communal setting. And everyone should be able to learn from them and grow from them and be able to take their lessons and make it a part of their own life. We were asked to speak about an upcoming event that's on the Jewish calendar, and we counted this morning and last night the 24th day of the Omer, and therefore we are just a stone's throw away from Lag BaOmer. And for many people, Lag BaOmer can be a confusing time. What are we celebrating? Why are we celebrating that all Rabbi Akiva's students stopped dying? It's a funny day of celebration that for... So it's very confusing for people, right? We've just been counting for all these days that the Talmidim and Rabbi Akiva have been dying, and comes the 33rd day, Mazel Tov, they stopped dying. It's like a funny thing to celebrate, right? There was a terrible catastrophe, and this is the day that there was no more people left alive to have any funerals, and therefore we're going to have a party. It's a funny day of celebration. One of the aspects of Lag BaOmer, as many people know, is this relationship between Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the great, the Tana Eloki, the holy Tana, who's buried in Meiron, and the revelation of Kabbalah and the authorship of the Zohar. So we'd like to do this morning for a few moments in preparation of Lag BaOmer is to talk about Kabbalah. What is it? How did it get to where we are right now? And what we can take away from it practically. So just a few disclaimers before we start. I am not a Kabbalist. And by the time you are done here, you will also not be a Kabbalist. Just to be clear, I'm not an expert in Kabbalah. What I know is from my learning, from my Rebbeim, from different Sfarim that we learn. I'm not well-versed in the writings of the Zohar and famous Mekubalim, but I want to learn together through what I've heard from my teachers and what I've seen from other Rebbeim as well, and teachers of Torah and Sfarim, what we can draw and take away from what Kabbalah is and go through the history a little bit of where Kabbalah came from and where it comes to right nowadays. Just before we start as well, the basic skeleton of what we're going to say is something I heard a number of years ago from Rav Aaron Lopiansky, who's the Rosh Yeshiva in Silver Spring, who's Adam Gadol and a tremendous Talmid Chacham, and he definitely knows more about Kabbalah than I do. But we're going to take some of the skeleton that Rabbi Lopiansky presented, and we're going to build, we're going to expand, and look what the sources have to say about Kabbalah and how we apply it throughout history into our life. The word Kabbalah comes from the word lekabel, to receive, in Lashon HaKodesh. The Ramban begins in his opening comments in Bereishis. This is the first source that we have in front of us. The Ramban writes, Shemaisa Bereishis Sod Amok. The episodes of the creation of the world is a great sod. It's a secret. Eino Muvan Min HaMikros. If you read the literal words of the Torah itself in Bereishis, you can't really understand what's going on. What came first? What came second? Is this an actual telling of what occurred? The whole thing is very confusing. But Yevada Alburiyav, and it's not clear to understand. Elamipia Kabbalah and Moshe Rabbeinu. And here the Ramban uses this word. We only way we understand the depths and the secrets of what occurred is from a Kabbalah, from some sort of reception from Moshe Rabbeinu, mipi agvura, from Hashem. V'yodu chayav and lahastroso. And those who know the secrets of what happened in creation must hide it. So we have here two words that we're going to come back to again. The one is that a Kabbalah, a reception of something that came before me, and also that there is sisrei haTorah, there are secrets here as well. And that's the aspect of Sod. Rashi writes in two places in Shas, once in Chagiga, again at the end of Maseches Pesachim, that the concept, Sisrei HaTorah, that which is hidden of the Torah, is an expression used to refer to Kabbalah. What is the secret if thousands of people learn it? There are yeshivas of Mekubalim. There are people who study Kabbalah, people who learn Zohar. That's not such a good secret, right? Anyone here can go to the store, if they go to the Sfarim store, and buy a set of Zohar. I'm not saying you should, but you can go buy a set of Zohar. So what type of a secret is that? That everybody can go and access it, and you can Google it, and you can find whatever you want. It's not a very well-kept secret. The reason is that it's called Sisrei HaTorah, Sod, is because it is intrinsically concealed with ideas that are beyond our grasp. It is something that is above us, something that's beyond perhaps what we can attain with our normal human intellect. Judaism sees the physical world as a deeper manifestation of a spiritual idea. Rav Schechter likes to say that the Torah is that the Elokus, godliness, needs a... I can't understand Hashem. Hashem is way beyond my comprehension. And the Torah is a mashal of a mashal of a mashal of a mashal. It's a parable of a parable of a parable of a parable of God. It's some way that we can possibly connect to the infinite that's way beyond our understanding. And Kabbalah refers to the connection between the physical reality, the chairs we sit on, the bagels and lox that we eat, the weather around us, and the spiritual realm that is beyond our comprehension. Kabbalah is the study of the hidden, underlying essence of the world around us. I often like to give a mashal that kind of gives us a picture a little bit. Everyone here, I assume, most people here drive a car. But most people are not mechanics. They don't necessarily understand how the pistons work and what's going on in the carburetor and what's going on in the fuel and all these things like that. But does it mean that you can't be a good driver if you don't know how your car works? I don't know how my car works, but I think I'm an okay driver. So what does that mean? What that means is as follows. Every Jew can drive the car. You can do mitzvos, you can wave a lulav, you can learn Torah, you can daven, you can hear shofar, you can wear tzitzis, you can light Shabbos candles. Every Jew here can drive the car. There are some Jews who are mechanics. Not only do they drive the car, but they also know what's going on beneath the hood. They understand how it's working. When you do a mitzvah, what's going on in Shemayim? When I interact with people, what's going on in the spiritual realm? You do not need to be a mekubal, a Kabbalist, in order to be a good Jew. But people who are able to understand what's going on beneath the hood of the car can now have a greater appreciation of how the car works. And that's a mashal that can give us a picture of relationship between how it means to act as a Jew and what it means to also go beneath the surface and see beneath what is going on. The closer we get to the root of something, then the more emes it is, the more truth it is. And the more something needs to be explained, the more it is a parable of the truth, right? I can give you a graph, I can give you a diagram, I can have a mathematical formula, I can, you know, I can use physical things to show you exactly the relationship. But that's not ever it. That's just a mashal, that's a parable of whatever it is. Why is it that Kabbalah is kept concealed? So we'll give two suggestions. The first reason is that it's a sod, and it's not spread all over the world, and it's very difficult for people to take something that is abstract, something that is beyond what we can sense with our five senses, and to make a part of their life. And with the wrong understandings of Hashem, chas v'sholom, a person could think that Hashem has a body. Hashem, you know, is like you and me. And we talk about, if you're saying sphere, so you'll know on the other side of the line of your sitter, it says today is Teferes Shebesod, this is Netzach Shebahot, all these different types of terms that refer to aspects of godliness and Kedusha. If you make a mistake and you begin to think, it says that Hashem took us out b'yad chazakah v'zoron etuyah, with a right hand. And a person begins to investigate, what does it mean Hashem has a right hand? A person may mistakenly walk away thinking that Hashem is a body. And therefore, because many of the ideas of Kabbalah are abstract, we keep them on the down low. We don't want to talk about the people who might misrepresent them. In addition, it's complex and it requires background. We'll give another example. We'll give a mashal. Kabbalah are the deepest, most complicated aspects of the Torah. If you do not first build up in the revealed parts of the Torah, and you know Tanakh, and you know Mishnah, and you know Gemara, and you know all of the Mefarshim on the Gemara, and what the Poskim say, and the Shulchan Aruch, and all these things. You don't know all of that background first, and then I put you in front of a book of Kabbalah, then you're not going to understand it. I think people think, like, if you open up a Zohar and you read two lines, your head is going to start to melt like Raiders of the Lost Ark and your face is going to fall off. That's not what's going to happen. You just won't understand it. It won't make any sense to you. It's as if I brought you in to a doctoral level physics class at Harvard, and you have maybe, you know, a fifth grade background in like gravity, and that's all you know. And I walk you into this class. Are you going to blow up if you walk into the class? No. But are you going to have any clue of what's going on? No, you'll understand the words. You're like, these are English words that perhaps I've heard before, but the concepts will relate to you. So one of the reasons why Kabbalah is not for everybody is because you need to have mastered all of the revealed parts of the Torah first in order to go to the more complicated aspects. The Ramban, twice in his writings, refers to Aristotle as the man who believed what he could sense. That's the knock that the Ramban has on Aristotle. He says he's a really smart guy, but he only believed that what he could sense with his five senses. And the Ramban says there's a certain arrogance of a human being to say, if I can only see it, smell it, touch it, hear it, and view it through my senses, then it exists. But if I can't sense it any other way, then it doesn't exist. And the Ramban finds that to be an arrogant approach to the world. If I can't measure or experience it, it's not there. Kabbalah is the total reality versus partial reality. The Kabbalah says that we only see part of the universe. I see many of the stars in the sky, but do I see all of the galaxies? No. There's some things in this world that are beyond my comprehension that I cannot sense by myself. And it requires a bit of humility as well. The Keser Rosh, which is the sayings of Rav Chaim of Elazhin, the famed Talmud of Vilna Gaon. Look at what he writes over here. The Gra told him the following thing. Amar Rabbeinu, Shemimakum Shemistayim HaPhilosophia, wherever philosophy ends, Misham Ulamala Matzchil Chachmas HaKabbalah. Where your intellect and your mind and your senses end, that is the realm of Kabbalah. That there's a part of this world that's beyond our comprehension, something more than we can see. The Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, writes in his Kalach Pischei Chachma, his 138 entrances to Chachma, he says, L'das hanagaso shel ratzon ha'elyon. Kabbalah means to know the knowledge of God. Ama bara kol habrios ha'ila. What created this whole world? Umahu wrote to him. And what does Hashem want of us? Umah yasof kol sivui olam. And what will be the end of this entire world? Ve'ech misparshim kol ha'gigulim ha'ila asher ba'olam. And how do we understand all the things in this world? Again, it's going beneath the surface. It's opening up the hood, looking into the car to see the things that are not there and apparent on the surface. So that is just a very layman's overview of what Kabbalah is, what it is not. And now let's get into the history of Kabbalah. Let's begin at the very, very beginning of Kabbalah Satorah. The teachings of Kabbalah are part of Torah Shebaal Peh that was passed down from Moshe to Har Sinai. Just like we all believe that there's Gemara and there's Torah Shebaal Peh and there's drashos and there's concepts of how we learn the Pesukim of the Torah, Kabbalah was part of that as well. It just wasn't something you learned in the cheder or in second grade. But it's all part of Torah Shebaal Peh. The Torah says at Har Sinai that Hashem saw that there was absolutely nothing to see. They had no actual visions of God. There's no description of seeing a kisei hakavod or a chariot or any malachim or things like that. They maybe saw colors and there's very vague descriptions, but there was no actual visions of godliness. And then all of a sudden, we open up the Navi Yechezkel. And this is the Haftorah that we read on Shavuos. And in Yechezkel, we have these grand descriptions of chariots and the heavenly throne and malachim and all these types of images that Yechezkel HaNavi sees with his own eyes. And all of a sudden, we have a contradiction. We were told already in the Torah that there's no images of God. We can't see anything. And then, all of a sudden, in Yechezkel HaNavi, we have these very vivid pictures of what godliness appears like. And this tells us that there must be something beneath the surface. There must be something beyond what we can comprehend. And therefore, this stira tells us that there's something that's out there that appears on the surface one way, but in reality, there's something beyond the surface. And the nevuah of Yechezkel HaNavi is the first taste of Kabbalah, of sod, the secrets of the Torah, that we have as a Jewish people. Perhaps they say that's why, that's the Haftorah for Shavuos. Why? Because it has all these secrets. And what does everybody do during the Haftorah on Shavuos morning? They're sleeping because they were up all night. That's when everybody takes a nap so they can refresh for Musa, right? So that's why, because nobody's paying attention anyway. And everybody sleeps through these secrets. The Tanayim, the Mishnah, speak about Kabbalah and how it should be taught. It says in the Gemishin Maseches Chagiga, Ein Dorshin, we don't teach, Lo B'maisa B'reishis B'shnayim, we don't teach about the secrets of creation with two people, V'lo B'merkava B'yachar, we don't teach one person the secrets of the Merkava, the chariot that Yechezkel HaNavi saw, Ela'im Kenai Yachachum Amevin Midaito, unless you are a very wise, profound, and thinking individual. This Mishnah indicates the clear representation of Torah Shebaal Peh, that there was a form of esoteric wisdom not contained within the standard corpus of Torah literature. And therefore, if a person believes in Torah Shebichsav, and a person believes in Torah Shebaal Peh, then a Jew must also believe that there is the Torah of Kabbalah. It's part of Torah Shebaal Peh, the same Mishnah that tells us if your ox gores another ox and you can't light a candle on Shabbos and all these things, the same Mishnayos, the same Tanaim teach us that there are esoteric parts of the Torah that are not for everyone. The Gemara elaborates on this, and we have a long discussion, Maseches Chagiga, describing the extraordinary things, the extraordinary ideas that appear to people who studied Kabbalah, and the same Torah Shebaal Peh that teaches you about Sittis, and whoever's doing the Daf teaching you about Sota, and Yibam, and all those things, the same Torah Shebaal Peh contains lessons that are esoteric, that are secrets, that require a Kabbalah in order to learn them. Now, what were the earliest texts, before we get to the Zohar and things like that, what were the earliest texts that they had that related to Kabbalah? So one is the Sefer Yetzirah, the book that's attributed to Avraham Avinu by Rav Sadja Gaon. Rav Sadja Gaon, who was the greatest of that time before the year 1000, Rav Sadja Gaon has a parish on the Sefer Yetzirah, and he writes an introduction that the Sefer Yetzirah, we have a tradition, is attributed in authorship to Avraham Avinu. It is agreed to be ancient. It is already mentioned in the Sefer Kuzari. The Kuzari writes about the Sefer Yetzirah as well in Shar Dalet. So all of these early sages, these great philosophical, Rav Sadja Gaon was a philosopher, Rav Yehuda Halevi the Kuzari was a philosopher, they all speak to the existence of these esoteric texts. And the Sefer Yetzirah develops the idea, perhaps the idea we've heard before, that the world has three aspects to it, the idea of Ashan, that there is an Olam, Shana, and Nefesh, that the whole world can be divided into three aspects, space, time, and man. And everything can be put in. So for example, perhaps you've heard the idea that on Yom Kippur, the holiest day of the year, the Kohen Gadol, the holiest Jew, goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the holiest place. And this is the idea that the Sefer Yetzirah develops again and again and again. There's a book called the Sefer Heichalos, a book called the Sefer Abahir, and the Gaonim also studied Kabbalah as well. I brought for you a tshuva from a manuscript that is brought by Rav Moshe Cordovero. This is a tshuva from Rav Hai Gaon. And he says, Yomadenu Rabbeinu, teach us our Rebbe. Ki matzinu l'razal yud gemel mido shikiba Moshe Rabbeinu al v'shalom. We have 13 aspects of mercy that Moshe Rabbeinu received. Ula Avram Avinu al v'shalom b'sefer yachsuhu razal. And we have this book of the Sefer Yetzirah that Avram Avinu had. Al Shmo b'hu Sefer Yetzirah mona sham eser sfiros. And in the book of the Sefer Yetzirah counts the idea of 10 sfiros, 10 emanations of God in this world. And then he says, how do we deal, then the question to Rav Hai Gaon is, how do we deal with this idea of there are 13 midos rachamim, but there's 10 spheros, how do the 10 and the 13 fit together? That's not for our discussion right now. But again, the Gaonim openly engaged in teaching and studying works of Kabbalah. After the period of the Gaonim, we generally put the demarcation of the time between the Gaonim and the Rishonim around the lifetime of Rashi. Rashi lived 1040 to 1105, which is always the time of recess as well. That's how children remember when Rashi lived, 1040 to 1105. And therefore, in the earliest generations of the Rishonim, we have great teachers of Kabbalah as well. So for example, Rav Yitzchak ben HaRavid, the Ravid, the famous commentary on the Rambam, the famous glosses on the Rambam. So he had a son, known as Rav Yitzchak Sagi Nahor, meaning he was blind. Sagi Nahor means full of light. It's an expression to say that somebody, we use the nicer way to say it instead of the more, in a more negative way. He was, Rav's son was blind, and he was the greatest teacher of Kabbalah of his time. And then, in the next generation, comes the Ramban. We all know and love the Ramban because of his Perush on Chumash and his Chiddushim on Shas. And the Ramban is on the pedestal of the greatest authors and teachers of Torah in the history of Klal Yisrael. But he was also the greatest Mekubal of his time. And he was the greatest teacher and expositor of Kabbalistic Torah in his lifetime. And how do I know this? Because it's openly said in his Perush on the Torah. The Ramban, throughout his commentary on the Torah, brings deep, esoteric, Kabbalistic ideas. Now he uses different terms than we use, but he speaks about the same ideas. He quotes the Sefer HaBahir in early texts of Kabbalah. He quotes the Medrash Eretz Yisrael in early texts of Kabbalah. And he quotes the Sefer Ne'alam, which is the precursor to what we'll talk about in the Zohar as well. All of these pieces the Ramban quotes are found in the Zohar. And the Ramban will speak about Sodin Kabbalah throughout his parashah in the Torah. But how come nobody here has come across this? Because it's not learned by most people. And also, whenever he introduces a section of Kabbalah, the Ramban always says, I will now explain to you al derech ha'emes, on the path of truth. And then, if you have even an art scroll Ramban, or translation of the Ramban, art scroll will then give you the following little note. And they'll say, this piece of the Ramban is based on highly Kabbalistic sources, and it's not for you, so we're not going to translate it. We'll see you on the next page.
And edited by modern editors.
So the point is, art scroll is saying, we're in the business of teaching you the Ramban's pshat in the Torah and his hashkafa. We're not in the business of teaching you Kabbalah, and if you want that, you know, that's somewhere else, but art school is not in the business of, you know, I hope at no time art school will say the new, you know, Rosenfeld edition of the translation of the Zohar. That's probably not coming out anytime soon, and that's not art school's business is supposed to be. And those things are kept secret for people who should know how to learn those things on their own. Meaning, if somebody needs art school to translate Kabbalah for you, it probably means you should not be learning Kabbalah. It's probably like a good indication. Even the Rambam, the ultimate rationalist, who it was not necessarily exposed to the concepts of Kabbalah and the Zohar that we speak about, understood there was Sisra HaTorah. The Rambam speaks about Sisra HaTorah in the Mor Nevuchim. It's not the same language as the Mekubalim, and it's not the same exact approach, but the Rambam, the great rationalist, who doesn't engage perhaps in, you know, mystical things, agreed that there was esoteric, deeper part of the Torah for people, not everybody, to access, and only for special people to get through. That's what the Mor Nevuchim is, where he speaks about these esoteric ideas. Then comes now to the 1200s and 1300s. And onto the scene comes a rabbi by the name of Rav Moshe de Leon. He died in 1305. And in his lifetime, he began publicizing volumes on Kabbalah that would eventually become the Zohar. The Zohar is a perush on the Torah written in Aramaic. What does the Zohar contain? Well, it contains a bunch of different works together. There's not one, only one book called the Zohar. The Zohar is made up of different volumes that are put together. There's this Hakdama to the Zohar. There's the Safed Tzniusa, which the Vilna Gaon felt was like the Mishnah. The Mishnah for the Gemara, the Safed Tzniusa is like the same type of thing in Kabbalah as well. The Tikkun HaZohar are 70 essays on the opening words of Bereishis. The Raya Mehemna, which deals with Tamei HaMitzvos, the Kabbalistic reasons for the Mitzvos, and sections called the Idra Rabba, the Idra Zuta, which are the private discussions that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai had with his Talmidim in Meiron. And that's where he revealed some of his most private pieces to them. This is when the Zohar becomes public. Because Rav Moshe de Leon says, and he writes, that this is from a manuscript that I came across, and I'm publishing it for the first time. All of these teachings are Shimon Bar Yochai. And the Zohar, as we know, even if you don't know what it says in the Zohar, we all know the Zohar is a foundational work of Kabbalah that contains many of these ideas. The question then became, is the Zohar authentic? Or did Rav Moshe de Leon simply make it up and write his own work? Is it actually from Shimon Bar Yochai? The claim of the Maskilim, the claim of those non-traditional Jews, was that it was the work of Moshe de Leon, and that's where it came from. He claimed that the work was authentic, going back to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and he was copying from a manuscript. There was a Talmid Chacham in his generation named Rav Yitzchak de Min Akko, Rav Yitzchak of the city of Akko, and he questioned the authenticity. Rav Yitzchak de Min Akko was a Talmud of the Ramban, and he investigated the authenticity of the Zohar. There was a rumor that the widow of Rav Moshe de Leon said that her husband told her that he made it up himself. On the other hand, though, Rav Yitzchak de Min Akko writes that he tried to get to the bottom of this. So he went to Rav Moshe de Leon one day, and he made up a whole story. And he said, you know, I bought this. What was the system? You'd go to Rav Moshe de Leon, you'd say, I want these sections are, and then he would sit from his manuscript and copy over, you know, something for you. And then he would give you that the handwritten copy from him. So Rav Yitzchak de Min Akko one day went to Rav Moshe de Leon, and he told him, you know, I bought this set from you, but I lost it. Do you think you could, you know, get me another one? Now, what was he trying to test? Because if it was written from an actual manuscript, then he can duplicate it again. But if it's just this random stuff that came off of his head, then how is he going to make a perfect copy again if it's not from an actual manuscript? So he went and he wrote for him a word-for-word perfect copy of the original thing that he said he lost. And he tried to catch him in a lie, and he didn't. And he was left for the rest of his life, I don't know, rumors, and he wasn't sure how to end the entire thing. But the truth is that it is unlikely that the greatest Talmid Chacham of that generation would have seen a work that contained new ideas and raised no concern. All of the Mekubalim of that generation seemingly were okay with what was written in the Zohar. There were some who questioned pieces. Maybe things came later, things crept in from over time, and things maybe were not in the original work. But all major camps of Talmid Chachamim agreed that it contained authentic Torah going back to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. None of the contemporary Talmid Chachamim of his time, like Rabbeinu Bachya, had any questions. It was used by the Akedas Yitzchak, the Abarbanel, all the greatest thinkers had no problem in that generation quoting from the Zohar. Let's look over here from a piece from the Leshem. The Baal HaLeshem, we'll talk about it in a moment. The Leshem Shuv Achlam in the Sefer Hadeah. And he speaks to this point. Let's just read this paragraph. He says, Kfar Hochiach Kodesh Elyon HaRamak, Rav Moshe Cordovero has already shown, Bepardei Shar Eser, Velo Tisha, he quotes the source, Ki Achshav Asher Nisgal HaChachmas HaEmes, Unisparse Mechol Chachm Yisrael. Now that the wisdom of truth has been revealed to the Jewish people, Asher Hi Morasha L'Kilas Yaakov, it is an inheritance of the congregation of Jacob, Mimosh Rabbeinu Alav Hashem, Mipiagrua, from Hashem, from Moshe. Hine kol misha mema'ein umefak pekbazeh. Those people who question it, who yikra kofir, they're a heretic. Kearehu kofir b'chelek echad me'tor shvalpeh. Because Kabbalah is part of Torah shvalpeh. Umotzi es asmi me'umen as klal Yisrael. Such a person who denies the veracity and the truth of the Zohar and the Kabbalah is not being part of the Jewish people. Kimeishin is parsma b'kol b'chal Yisrael. Because the time that Kabbalah was revealed to the Jewish people, Mizman haramban ulhalan going forward, lo nimtzu shum chacham echacham Yisrael. There was not a single wise Jew. Gam mikol chacham hamechar, even those who were involved in philosophy. Ukenoda hagona chacham ba'al akedah. The Akedas Yitzchak v'isek harama. Kame hiflik laharitz l'kdushas chacham asa Kabbalah. How much the Akedas Yitzchak loved the Zohar. And Rav Jikatilia, and also love the Zohar as well, and the Sefer Orah, and the Abarbanel, Rav Yitzchak Abarbanel, all of these rationalists, they all loved and accepted the Zohar, and they raised no questions. El Shekodel Mazeh Hayaganus V'Tzafen Rak Eisel Yechidei Skul B'Dor. Until that time, it was only kept with certain individuals. Ukano de Mitshuvas Hagonim. We know from the Tshuvah Gonim, Amem Eis Haramban V'Halah. From the Ramban's days and onwards, Hine Nisparsim V'Bechol Yisrael. It spread throughout the Jewish people. Below Pik Bekele, nobody questioned it. Shum Chachmei Olam, any wise person, Mikol Chachmei Yisrael, of all the leading rabbis. Ashir Meyameyam, Anushosim, from their water we drink. Ubeperushi HaTalmud Ubeposkim, and we use their commentaries on the Talmud and the Poskim. Ubeprat Mishazocha Lea, Hare Roa Shadvarim, Adlas, Adlas. We see anybody who knows Kabbalah looks at the Zohar and says, this makes 100% sense. B'divrei Zohar HaKadosh Hu Eid Shehu LaHarashbi. It is something that comes from Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. B'divrei HaRizal Hu Adjal Gevuras HaRi. And the same with the HaRizal. And we'll get back to this in a moment. And therefore, that's the proof that they want to bring. Another point, as some point out, is that we have Svarim from Moshe Dilyan. We have other books of Kabbalah that he wrote himself. They're incomparable. It's as if two different people wrote them. The styles are different. The quality is different. Those people who know Zohar and learn Zohar will tell you that the flow and the smoothness of the Zohar is not the very staggered, unpoetic, difficult style of Rav Moshe Dilyan. That there are two separate authors. It's not something that came from his own head. It's a collection of midrashim, stories, pshatim, containing Ramazim, but it's understood as well that even if you were to go and open up a Zohar and read a translation, it wouldn't make sense to you because these are all so the Ramazim. They're hints to higher things. Now, without a background, these ideas will not make any sense to you. Now, the attribution of the Zohar to Rashbi, is that also clear? Let's agree that it's an ancient text going back to Tanaim. Is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai the author of the Zohar? So, one question is the Zohar quotes Amoraim who lived after Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? That's a serious question. The other question is there are concepts that seem after the days of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So, for example, Has anybody been to Amsterdam before? I haven't. But in Amsterdam, there's a famous Esnoga shul. The Esnoga is the major shul in Amsterdam. It's Spanish-speaking, and that's where it comes from. What's an Esnoga? Esnoga is Spanish for a shul. Why? Because the Zohar says and refers to something called the Eshnoga, in the shul is a fire, is a holy light. An Eshnoga is in the shul. Now that is a play on words of the Spanish Esnoga for a shul. That whole idea is a later concept, meaning we're making a play on words on something in Latin, something that Rishon Baruchai did not have. Eshnoga, Esnoga, a temple. So that's also later Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And there's also geographical items that are outside of Eretz Yisrael, where Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai lived. So that begins to raise the question. So Rav Yaakov Emden had many, many ha'aretz. Rav Yaakov Emden, the great Talmud Chacham and Rav and Posek, and he had many questions on the Zohar. And Rav Yaakov Emden argued that the Yesodos and the main points of the Zohar are authentic from Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. But there were additions that crept in over time. When dealing with manuscripts, so let's say I have a sefer, this is not going to happen to me, but let's say I have a sefer, and on the side of a sefer I write my notes, I write connections, I have a comment over here, and then what happens? Somebody picks up my sefer in the next generation, and they say, oh, let's print it with these comments. And then what happens? The printing comments get kind of subsumed into the main text of the document. And Rabbi Yaakov Emden said, the main text, the main ideas are of Shimon Bar Yochai. But over time, things crept over from a glossus and notes that were added. The Gra, as well, the Vilna Gaon, wrote a commentary on the Zohar, and he also pointed out things that he felt had crept in over time from different places. And generally, the rules as follows. I'll give you an example. The works of Rashi are loved and guarded, and therefore protected over time. Rashi al Torah, we have very carefully looked at manuscripts, and we're very careful about every word in Rashi, and therefore Rashi has been preserved. The Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, also had a commentary on Chumash, and it's in the Mikros Gedolos. But because Rashbam's commentary was not as beloved as Rashi's, it kind of got, you know, corrupted over time, and it fell out of use, and it's not as good as addition as Rashi. When something is widely used, and widely accepted, and beloved, well then, we protect the version of it very carefully. But if something is esoteric, and only a few people have it, it's understood that over time what will happen? Mistakes will creep in, because nobody's watching the text so well. And that was the opinion of Yaakov Emden, and that's the opinion of many Gedolim as well. That the ideas are essentially Rosh Shimon Bar Yochai's ideas, with over time perhaps things that might have developed from other places, other Talmidei Chachamim. With the expulsion of Spain in 1492, there was an explosion of Torah across the world. Because all of these Talmidei Chacham who were in Spain were sent out over Europe and into the Middle East and to Eretz Yisrael and to different places. And at the beginning of the 1500s, the middle of the 1500s, something remarkable occurred in the city of Tzfas. In the city of Tzfas, the greatest collection of Torah scholars of all time didn't just end up. They all lived, our neighbors, and davened together and learnt in the same base medrash. At the same time in Tzfas, let's see who lived together. Rav Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Shlomo Alkabetz, the author of Lecha Dodi, the Ramak, Rav Moshe Cordovero, the author of the Tomer Dvora, the Alshech HaKadosh, whose work on Chumash is learned throughout Klal Yisrael, the author of the Sefer Charedim, the greatest collective of Jewish brains ever, all lived and knew each other, like they hung out. Like they went to breakfast together, and they went to the kids' birthday parties. They all lived together, and they all write about each other. All living together in the 1500s in Tzfas. It was a remarkable, remarkable time. The Alshech was the Darshan. He's the one who gave the Drasha every week, every Shabbos in Tzfas. And like the Arizal, you know, so kind of would like go to hear his Drasha. It's crazy that this all went on at the same time. Rav Moshe Cordovero was the leader, the head of the Chabura of these people, and he authored a work called the Tomer Dvar. Tomer Dvar is very popular to be learned as Aseres Yemei Tshuva all the time. It talks about midos and working on ourselves, and it's all based in Kabbalah. And he is really the end of the line of the previous generations of Mekubalim. Because at the end of the life of Moshe Cordovero, arrived in Tzfas a young man in his 30s named Rav Yitzhak Luria, who would become known as the Arizal. And he very quickly became the head of that group, and he became acknowledged in the very short 3 years that he lived in Tzfas before he died suddenly as the leading teacher of Kabbalah in his time. And all of the Gedolim in Tzfas, Rabbi Yosef Cairo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, bowed down to him, agreed that he was the biggest teacher of Kabbalah, and that changed the world a little bit, a lot actually. He would teach for 3 years, everything he would know to explain the Zohar and Kabbalah, all written down by Rav Chaim Vital, his Talmud, in Sfarim called the Eitz Chaim, and where he writes about the Kabbalah of the Arizal. And the Arizal would clarify and name and explain different parts of Kabbalah, linked and complex ideas in the Torah together, and Sifrei Kabbalah, and things like that. Now, what are you supposed to do with that? Nobody here is supposed to do anything with it, but just to know that the Arizal came onto the scene and played a major role in turning and enhancing the teaching of Kabbalah. That's now in the 1500s. Then, Kabbalah afterwards, the next generations, refracted, I would say, into three different schools. The first is the school of the Sfardim and the Rashash, Rav Shalom Sharabi. By the Sfardim, Kabbalah became about teaching kavanos, what you think about when you daven it, what you're davening, contemplating and meditating on names of God during the davening. If you've ever seen the Siddur of the Rashash, or people who practice the davening of the Kabbalah of the Rashash, it's this massive, it looks like a dictionary. It's this huge book, and every single word has what you're supposed to think about in this aspect of Hashem, in this sphera, and this thing, and every single word of davening is a meditation and a contemplation of some sort of word. That was one line that came from the Arizal, the school of the Rashash. Chassidus in the 1700s took Kabbalah in a different direction. Chassidim said that Kabbalah is important to elevate a person. The words of Kabbalah, even if you don't understand what they're saying, said the Baal Shem Tov, can make a person in this world feel very big and very important, and think that our actions, and feel that our actions and our mitzvos have an impact on the world. And in Chassidus, they took Kabbalah as a form to say that when you put on tefillin, you're affecting this realm in Shemayim, and when you daven, you're making this happen in the world, and when you don't speak Lashon Hara, this is rectifying this aspect of the world, and you take the concepts of Kabbalah, these very grand ideas, and you use it in your mitzvos to say, ah, my actions, what I'm doing, is having huge impact on the world around me, even though I can't see it. And it raised a person up, because yesterday morning, when I went to davening, okay, I was talking to Hashem, very nice. But now that I think, when I talk to Hashem, do you know what's going on with the Malachim and what's happening over here, and it affects a tsunami in China, and it takes your actions and turns them into something that is much bigger. And that was very inspirational, moving for Hasidim. Chabad took a slightly different approach. Chabad, in their church teaching of Kabbalah, was to meditate on the greatness of Hashem in their teaching of Torah, and that would raise a person up, a different approach. The third approach was the Beis Medrash of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon felt that Pnimiyas HaTorah, secrets of the Torah, were meant to teach us about the depth of Torah. It's meant to explain the structure of Torah, the Tanakh, Shas, Mitzvos. Like we said before, the mechanic who's looking underneath the hood. When you learn the Torah, the Grah shows patterns of concepts that fit together and don't fit together. These mitzvahs are grouped together because they're linked for Kabbalistic reasons, and these mitzvahs don't. And this theme of four or three do or don't link together as well. The point, says the Grah, is that if you understand the pnimius of the Torah, then the whole Torah fits together, right? If I understand, if I'm an architect, or I appreciate architecture, and I look at the plans, and now I appreciate the building much more. So the Grah said, learn the depths of the Torah, so now you intellectually, and as a person, will appreciate what you're doing, and the whole Torah will make more sense to you, and fit together beautifully. Now, we'll just take a let's continue to the path of the Grah for a moment. In the Beis Medrash of the Grah, we developed into other areas as well. Most famously, the Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, Rav Chaim of Elazhin, who wrote his magnum opus, the Nefesh HaChaim. It was a sefer that he wrote to counter what he felt was an incorrect approach in Kabbalah from Chassidim. What happened? Chassidim felt three things that Rav Chaim of Elazhin wanted to counteract. The Chassidim felt that rote performance of mitzvos was wrong. Just to schlep along in the same davening, in the same not paying attention, and just to go like a robot is wrong. So we need to learn Kabbalah to spice things up, to make our mitzvos more dynamic. Rav Chaim Volozhin said that if you stress kavana and intentions too much, it will be a distortion of halacha. So for example, they'll say, Chassidim felt, I need to go to the mikvah in the morning and say all of Tehillim, and I need to daven later. Why? So I can have better kavana during davening. And Rav Chaim Volozhin said what? No. If you daven late, you're going to miss Zman. tefillah, right? You're going to daven too late. And he felt that could be a distortion. Too much intention on kavana could be a distortion of the halacha. The Hasidim also felt that a person should never feel that if you sin, everything is lost, right? You can always come back. Hashem will always take you back no matter what. You're not lost forever. Reb Chaim Volozhin said that approach could also lead to a person to make the following mistake. That if I do an Aveira, what? It's okay, because Hashem loves me no matter what. Hashem loves me no matter what. So if I sin, I can just keep on doing what I want because it won't make a difference. Yeah.
But that's where the concept of Teshuva comes in.
Correct. But the concept of Teshuva means that I messed up, but I have to do something about it. I can't stay in the muck and the mire and the dirt and the ground and be like, oh, Hashem likes me the way I am. Reb Chaim Volozhin said, if you take that vision too far of saying that Hashem is even in my Averos, then a person will say, I can watch whatever I want, do whatever I want, eat whatever I want, because Hashem is there, and it's okay. Everything I do is godly, right? The whole world is God. Everything I do is godly, so I can do whatever I want. And Reb Chaim Volozhin felt that was a very dangerous idea, so he wanted to pull that back. And the last thing is that Hasidim felt that many people learned Torah for kavod or intellectual pursuits and not because they wanted to connect to Hashem. And you have to focus in your learning of Torah to only to connect to Hashem. And if you don't do that, then it's a waste of time. And Reb Chaim Volozhin said, no. The approach of Hasidim in learning Torah is incorrect. We learn Torah in order to understand the Torah. The greatest lishma, the greatest thing you can do in learning Torah is to understand Hashem's Torah. Even if you're not, you know, meditating and your eyes are rolling back and you're, you know, having an epiphany. The greatest thing for Torah is to understand Hashem's Torah. And that was a debate that they had in Kabbalah. Also from the Beis Medrash of the Gra is Rav Yitzchak Isaac Chaver, and he wrote the Sefer Pischei Sharim, which was a major introduction to Kabbalah. And then finally, Rav El Yashav. Rav El Yashav, we quoted him before, that long paragraph. Rav El Yashav, who was the posek in Eretz Yisrael, passed away a number of years ago. This is his grandfather. And he wrote a series of sermons called the Leshem Shavo Ve'achlama, and he was known as the Baal HaLashem. That's all from the camp of the Gra. Now, generally, the Maskilim were against Kabbalah because they felt it wasn't rationalistic, it wasn't in line with their views. So there were some people like that as well that followed in that line. This is not the time for this right now, but in Yemen, in Tayman, there was a huge debate in the 1800s and a huge fight over using Kabbalah, not using Kabbalah, and that led to a big disagreement. There was a group of Yemenite Jews called the Dar De'im, which is a contraction of Dor Deya. They felt that they knew better, they didn't want to follow Kabbalah, and that led to a big fight. It's not a discussion not for right now. And then many Chachma Yisrael engage and use Kabbalah. Even Rav Hirsch, we'll quote from this in a moment, but even Rav Hirsch, the great teacher of Torah Derech Eretz and a great rationalist, studied Kabbalah and studied Zohar. We'll talk about that as well in a moment. There was an approach to Kabbalah where the ideas were turned into something that was more sichli, more intellectual, something that I could relate to in my own avodas Hashem. And that began with the Maharal, we'll talk about that in a moment, the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lozatzo, and in our previous generations of Dessler. The Maharal of Prague, who lived 1600s, so he used Kabbalah as well, and he took Kabbalistic concepts to explain Chazal and Tanakh. And he doesn't use Kabbalah language, but anyone who's been exposed to teachings of the Maharal, it's all based in Kabbalah. He just changed the language so we can relate to it more. In the previous generation, Rabbi Yitzchak Huttner, Rosh Shivan Chaim Berlin, the great author of the Pachad Yitzchak, took all of the Maharal's Torah and Kabbalah. He didn't cite a Zohar once in the Pachad Yitzchak. He won't use anything that says Kabbalah, but he's clearly using Kabbalistic ideas, and he took those concepts, and Rav Huttner opens up discussions about the holidays and the Moadim and Shabbos to enhance and to enlighten our perspective in an intellectual way that we can understand. And then in our generation, Rav Moshe Shapiro, who's the great teacher and greatest expert of Maharal in his time, who passed away a few years ago, also took those ideas of the Maharal and taught them in Kabbalah in a way that people could relate to them. Then comes the Ramchal in the 1700s. His life is a fascinating thing we don't have time for right now. But the Ramchal also took the ideas of Kabbalah and transferred them to works that we all know and love. Mesilas Yesharim, Derech Hashem. All practical ways to take Kabbalistic ideas in our Avodas Hashem as well. And then Rav Dessler, Rav Elio Dessler, in his famous Michtav Melyahu, took the ideas of the Ramchal and the Maharal and also gave them a vocabulary we could relate to as well. Later, his student, Rav Chaim Friedlander, would do that as well in his Sfarim. The issue that arose with Kabbalah, and this is the last point we want to make about what's the takeaway for us, now that we've come now to contemporary times, what is the takeaway for us when it comes to Kabbalah? The issue that arose with Kabbalah is that when it's exposed to the masses, who is to know? This is the question before. How do you know if it's real? How do I know if a person's a charlatan who just wants to spook me out and tell me some crazy thing about my mother that nobody ever knew, or tell me I need to write a new ksuba because my name and my wife's name don't fit together? All these types of interesting things. How do I know when the person is a charlatan and the real deal? Or how do I know to tell in between? How do you know if someone is genuine? So let's talk about one of the things we often hear when we talk about Kabbalah is Kabbalah Ma'asis, which means like practical Kabbalah, the voodoo, the magic. Person learns Kabbalah, they'll turn you into a tree. I don't know, something like that, right? So what is that about? Kabbalah Ma'asis, the idea that you can use teachings of Kabbalah to change the physical structure of the world. With the advent of the Arizal and his teachings in the 1400s, 1500s, it's not a thing anymore. We don't find discussions about it. It's not on anybody's table. It's not on anybody's plate. It's not really something the Jewish people worry about. Any stories after the Arizal of fanciful things like that and golems and all things like that are probably not going to be real. Are there kochos in the Bria? Are there powers that people can do things? Sure, those things may very well exist. But as a policy, I would warn everyone to stay away from people who promise you secrets, who promise you shortcuts, who promise you quick fixes on your problems by using Kabbalah. Because often, what it comes out to be are charlatans, people who want to take advantage of you, people who see a person in a weakness, and they'll use concepts that sound mystical and fancy in order to take advantage of other people. If a person is not yashar, they're not righteous, they don't behave with good midos, they don't show themselves to be a talmid chacham, they act in weird and strange ways, I would advise you to run the other way. People who are teachers of Kabbalah, who are reliable, are people who are also Tamini Chachamim. They know Shas, they know Poskim. Someone like Rav Yaakov Hillel. Rav Yaakov Hillel is one of the greatest teachers of Kabbalah in Eretz Yisrael nowadays. He's a huge Talmid Chacham. He has his shiur. They learn Gemara all day and all night. And he puts out real Sfarim with real Torah. People who know will know if the person has Yir Shemayim, they act in a righteous way, they don't make you feel icky or uncomfortable or doing something weird. That's probably a good indication as well. Generally, a person that we turn to are people who are Tamil Chachamim in all areas of Torah. This is what I want to quote from Rav Hirsch just for a moment. Rav Hirsch writes about this a little bit in his 19 letters, and then the editor, Rabbi Joseph Elias, so he elaborates this more. And he wants to know, how come Rav Hirsch doesn't stress Kabbalah? And he says a more likely reason for his attitude is a strong concern about the misuse of Kabbalistic ideas that was prevalent then as is now. There was always a danger in flight from rationality as well as misunderstanding Kabbalistic ideas. And here, just for the sake of time, we'll skip through it right now, but Rav Hirsch, he writes that, you know, you got to be careful that people shouldn't misuse and abuse these different ideas. What are some just basic important Kabbalistic ideas, just to wrap it up, and then we'll come with a takeaway. Something that we all come in contact with is the conception of God, the idea that Hashem is beyond us, incomprehensible. I always tell my students, do you want to believe in a God that you know everything about them? Right? Do you want to believe in a God that like you could have like a coffee with and like you know the whole background? That's not a God I want to believe in. I want to believe in a power that's way beyond me, that's way more powerful, that's way more intellectual, that's way beyond my comprehension. I don't want to believe in a God where like we're like on the same place and like we know each other equally, like we're friends. That's not what I want to believe in. Kabbalah teaches us there's something beyond our understanding. The way that Hashem created the world as well, the concept of divine emanations, spheros, how Hashem interacts with the world, different sections of the world, Yetzira, Bria, all these things that are going on in the heavens above us, and the cosmic effect of man's behavior. We are, as human beings, the microcosm of the world, cosmic consequences for our actions. When you do a mitzvah, it affects what's going on in Shemayim. And you do an Aveira, it affects what's going on in the world. That our mitzvos connect to something way, way above us that we try to reach for that have a major impact on the world around us. You need to have a teacher if you're going to engage even in Maharal. If a person who wants to be interested in teaching Maharal, Ramchal, things like that, you need to have a teacher, a rabbi, who's going to be able to open to these ideas, explain them so you don't walk away with a misunderstanding and come away with the proper approach as well. So why is Kabbalah important that we should know about it? Again, like I said a few minutes ago, my intention here is that nobody here walks out here thinking they are a Kabbalist and ready to crack open a fresh Zohar. That's not the point over here. But I want us to appreciate that this is a chelik of Torah. And without Kabbalah, a person can often take the ideas of the streets, social media, the news, and they'll live in, and they'll think that that is the way of the world. Meaning, a person who lives only with their senses in this world, like Aristotle, will make the Torah fit into their worldview. The worldview is what I see around me. I see that this is what it says on the news. This is what it says on social media. That's the world. And then they'll try to bend the Torah to the world around them. Why? Because the world is what I sense, and the Torah has to match the world that I live in. A person who has Kabbalah or believes in Kabbalah, they're not going to be pulled by liberalism, they're not going to be pulled by conservatism, by social media, because I understand that the Torah is something that is above them, beyond your intellect. It's not for you to comprehend everything. To appreciate the Torah is higher than your understanding. Kabbalah comes and says that Briyas HaOlam is MS. Hashem is MS. The Torah in the world created with the Torah is constant. And the Torah does not need to explain itself to you. You need to explain yourself to the Torah. The Torah is bigger than all of us. And that is how the generation should work. Kabbalah says that the emes of the world is Hashem and His Torah is emes, and the world is a physical manifestation of the Ratzon Hashem. As Rav Schechter likes to highlight, the Torah is the description of Elokus, of godliness, and therefore we bend to the Torah, because the Torah is something that we have to reach up for. It's in a realm beyond us. And not that we bring the Torah down and bend it and twist it into a pretzel to fit whatever the common feelings of the day are. And that, my hope, is that we walk away with a greater appreciation of Kabbalah. Thank you so much, everyone. Everyone should have a good rest of the Omer.